It is Tuesday, November 13th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from Malco Theaters, offering a variety of special showings, including the Saturday Metropolitan Opera in HD, rock concerts and music events, special live screenings, and more. Tickets and an event schedule available online at malco.com. KUAF is also supported by Ozark Natural Foods, Northwest Arkansas's consumer-owned food co-op since 1971, offering local, organic produce and all-natural groceries, bulk foods, health and wellness products, and a full-service deli. Ozark Natural Foods is located in the Evelyn Hills Shopping Center or on the web at ozarknaturalfoods.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, voters in Benton and Madison counties say they're ready for the legal sale and distribution of liquor. So what's next? Jacqueline Froelich maps out the next steps for the newly voted wet counties. And the Mont Alto Orchestra gives sound to silent films.
But first, the governor's office says it will formally notify federal officials this week that Arkansas will partner with the federal government in implementing the nation's health care law. Spokesman Matt DeCampbell says this is the deadline for the state to let the Department of Human Services know the state will work with the feds to operate a health insurance exchange.
By agreeing to this partnership, the state will still have some input through our insurance department and still be able to make sure that things like premium taxes that are collected on these policies, like other insurance policies, we get to make sure that money stays in Arkansas and doesn't go to Washington, D.C.
The decision comes as lawmakers next year will debate whether to expand the state Medicaid system under the federal health care law.
When the Rogers City Council meets tonight, it is expected to authorize a series of land purchases that would give land to the city's Parks Department. City Parks and Recreation Director Barney Hayes says the proposed land buy next to Veterans Park in East Rogers would expand the park's sports offerings.
The acquisition of this property that hopefully the council will approve tonight will add four additional small tracts of land there to give us the opportunity to add three additional fields, which that coupled with the two existing fields would give us a five-field complex and make it a very nice facility. We would hope to develop that later in 2013 and turn it into a very nice soccer complex that we could be able to host regional tournaments. The fields would be irrigated and lighted.
Hayes says with one of the larger adult and youth soccer programs in the state, the city is short on facilities to accommodate teams. He also says the new fields would fulfill the city's obligation to voters who approved a 2011 sales tax bond issue to build a new sports complex on Dixieland Road. The original plans for the sports complex, which is nearing completion, included construction of soccer fields, but when construction estimates came in over budget, the fields were scrapped. The city council tonight is also expected to approve purchase of land near Lake Atalanta for construction of trails. Hayes says the property in question is commonly known as the Philpott property.
It would be approximately 40 acres that we would purchase there, which would add to and enhance our trail system that we're getting ready to install in the Lake Atalanta area. This property would be advantageous to us from the standpoint we could add different bike amenities there, pump tracks and BMX courses, if you will, and also do some other site improvements like climbing walls and things that are very popular now with young people.
Hayes says the majority of the trails that would be built on the property would be unpaved and similar in nature to the Slaughter Pens trails in Bentonville.
If you were driving along Cato Springs Road in Fayetteville yesterday, you may have noticed that a portion of the road west of South School Street is closed. The section of street between Razorback Road and South Garland Avenue will remain closed through the beginning of next week as the city and the Arkansas-Missouri Railroad work to level out the railroad crossing. City engineer Sid Norbash says the work at the railroad crossing is only part of the larger Cato Springs Road improvement project.
The project the city is working on is improving Cato Springs Road from South School to Razorback. It's not going to be widened. It's still going to be two-lane. However, it will have some major improvements such as curb and gutter, drainage, and sidewalks, and basically a trail. And we have a very large bridge that's already in place on Cato Springs Road for the trail.
According to city documents, the multi-use sidewalk and trail will be built along the north side of Cato Springs Road. Norbash says the entire improvement project tentatively could be completed by sometime in the coming spring.
Sunday marked the one-year anniversary of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. According to Bentonville Advertising and Promotion Commission documents, the first 9 months of 2012 saw a roughly 14% increase in revenues from the city's 1% prepared food tax and the 2% hotel and lodging tax. A&P Commission President Kayleen Griffith says much of the increase in revenue can be traced directly or indirectly to Crystal Bridges.
Yeah, I think the opening has spawned development within our city, even not just our downtown, even our north entrance with the opening of Harps. I think we're seeing additional businesses kind of wanting to reap the benefits of having the number of visitors visiting Crystal Bridges.
In addition to the opening of Crystal Bridges, Griffith says 27 restaurants have opened in Bentonville in the past year, a growth sector arguably sparked by the increase of tourism traffic in the city. But while Griffith predicts at least 1 to 2 years of continued growth in revenue, she says continual development will be necessary to avoid a plateau in the growth of revenue.
I'd love to say that we're going to continue to see increase, but I'd like to have a realistic vision of it that we'll probably at some point flatten out and we'll, you know, hopefully have a different type of marketing and enhance our marketing in some way. I do think that we're going to have a benefit with Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art and their traveling exhibits. With those changes, people are going to want to come back to our area to see those new exhibits, and it will continue to draw people to our community.
Griffith says in recent years, the only year revenue actually decreased was 2009. Aside from that, she says revenue has grown at an average rate of 3 to 5% year over year.
Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville has chosen a new president. According to thecitywire.com, the college's board last night unanimously decided to enter into contract negotiations with Evelyn Jorgensen, the president of Moberly Area Community College. Jorgensen has served at the Moberly, Missouri College for 16 years. Jorgensen will replace current president Becky Penites, who has served as NWAC president for the past 10 years. Penites will retire at the end of June, and Jorgensen will take the position starting July 1st.
Meanwhile, a new study has found both campuses of Arkansas Tech University have an estimated annual economic impact topping $219 million in the communities of the campus's immediate service area. According to a release by the college, Arkansas Tech's Ozark campus alone makes an estimated annual impact of $18.2 million on Franklin County, amounting to about 7.6% of the county's gross domestic product. Using Bureau of Economic Analysis standards and statistical data generated by the Arkansas Tech Accounting Office, the study focused on three categories to estimate the economic impact, including demand for university services, student spending, and spending by visitors to the campus. The findings of the study show ATU Ozark expenditures had a $10.7 million impact on Franklin County, while student and visitor spending in the county totaled nearly $7.5 million.
Forecasters with the National Weather Service in Little Rock say colder temperatures should be the norm for today through Wednesday. Meteorologist Marty Trexler says a freeze warning has been issued for central, west, and southeast Arkansas.
With such a large cold air mass, we'll have these chillier temperatures and below normal temperatures for at least through midweek through Wednesday. And finally, we do see that warm up finally into Thursday and Friday and into the weekend when we get much closer to our normal temperatures. Normally here in the Little Rock area, our lows are right around 44 degrees or the middle 40s, and our highs also the middle 60s.
Tonight's weather forecast calls for clear conditions with a low in the lower 30s. Tomorrow we'll have clear skies with a high in the upper 50s to lower 60s. And tomorrow night, expect clear conditions with a low in the upper 20s to lower 30s.
This is Ozarks at Large. Residents of three Arkansas counties, Benton, Madison, and Sharp, who this month voted in favor of legal alcohol sales in previously dry counties, should be in excellent spirits given that the tally went in their favor. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, if you wish to go into the spirits business, you better be prepared to follow some stiff rules.
Rock Music Blares, as an employee at Weddington Liquor in West Fayetteville, arranges bottles of whiskey this Monday morning in preparation for a busy week. The sales floor is organized. Hard liquor to the left, wines on the right. Lots of micro-brewed and Arkansas-made beers fill chilled glass cases lining the walls. Weddington Liquor also sells retail alcohol to a private club in Rogers, but that contract will soon come to an end. That's because residents in Benton County voted 2-1 this election in favor of the manufacture or sale of intoxicating liquors. The ballot initiative called Keep Dollars in Benton County was funded by Stuart and Tom Walton, grandson heirs to the Walton family fortune. Together, they contributed more than $663,000. In Madison County, nearly 3,800 residents out of 6,600 registered voters were in favor of alcohol sales. And in Sharp County, nearly 3,890 voters out of 7,350 were in favor. And the Arkansas Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, which oversees licensure, is seeing a surge in permit applications. But Director Michael Langley says off-premise packaged liquor store permits are limited based on population. Madison County, with less than 16,000, can have just 3 liquor stores.
In Benton County's situation, it's eligible for 55 retail liquor package stores, which means they have the right to sell spirits to go.
And those applications will be made available beginning December 1st.
They'll fill them out. They'll complete a criminal background check. They'll submit their applications with their $2,000 during a time period that we set. After all the applications have been received and that time period ends, ABC will then go do a follow-up investigation to make sure that to verify everything that's contained in the applications. We will then, probably in April or May, seems to be the initial indication, have a drawing here in Little Rock in which we do a double-blind drawing to determine the order in which people will appear in front of the ABC board to have their applications considered.
The board will meet within 30 days of the drawing.
Once those hearings are held, then people will be issued their permits when their buildings are ready to open, when their businesses are ready to open, and then they'll begin to start selling alcohol. So you're looking at June or July to do that.
Madison County has no private clubs, but Benton County has more than 130. So what happens to them?
They continue as private clubs. The rules are relaxed in some things that they can do. If you drive by Benton County private club, their outdoor patios are hard to see in, or you can't see inside them. Those types of obstructions can be removed if, in 6 months, Benton County chooses to hold another election for liquor by the drink. They can do so, which will then open them with the ability to switch over from a private club permit to a restaurant mixed drink permit and be a for-profit company.
For 40 years, private clubs in Arkansas dry counties, by law, have had to purchase alcohol in-state, paying retail prices, but that practice changes as counties transition to wet.
They can apply for a retail beer permit and a restaurant wine permit, and once they receive those, or an on-premise wine permit, either one, once they receive those, they can buy their beer or their wine directly from a wholesaler. However, they still have to buy their hard liquor from a retail package store until there's a liquor by the drink vote.
This election, Sunday liquor sales passed in Tonty Town, Springdale, and Ozark. But in Boone County, which voted in favor of alcohol sales in 2010, the community of Lead Hill failed to pass a Sunday alcohol measure. Patrick Hill, assistant to Harrison Mayor Jeff Crockett, says the transition from dry to wet has not, which some had warned, led to more crime.
Indeed, none of those statistics increase as a result of alcohol sales. If anything, there's and it's very early to say to have any statistical reliability, but it seems to indicate that some of those numbers have even gone down as a result. purchases for such alcohol instead of having to drive to the border are happening locally. It's minimizing, therefore, oftentimes the use of drunk driving to and from the border and coming back home. So in a way, it makes sense, but it is still early on to give any statistical reliability.
Hill says it took a good 5 months before package sales of liquor, beer, and wine were widely available, and potential sales tax revenue could be estimated.
I want to stress it's very estimated, but we're predicting an annual revenue off of alcohol to be roughly $300,000.
Which is all going into the general fund.
And as of this most recent election on November 6th, we are now able to sell liquor by the drink to invite franchises such as Applebee's or Red Lobster to be able to come to town.
But Boone County will likely see a drop in alcohol sales revenue because patrons in the south from Madison County won't have to travel north to purchase their beer, wine, and liquor. Kingston resident Bob Barton initiated the successful ballot initiative campaign titled Keep Money in Madison County.
We were very pleased that the people in Madison County seemed to agree with us.
And although Barton has ceased campaigning forever, he says he's had enough, he's now being queried by residents about how to secure alcohol sales permits.
Most of them are confused enough about what type of license it is that they want that it's going to take a little while, I think, for everybody to figure that out.
Barton doesn't believe alcohol sales will change things.
Honestly, I don't think it's going to change the local culture much at all. That was part of our reasoning behind changing the law, because there is no culture of dryness in Madison County. It's just we're legally dry. But the only thing that I think in the near term that will be apparent in change in the county is the convenience stores. Various different convenience stores around the county will undoubtedly put off-premises or beer for off-premises consumption in. But other than that, I don't think it's going to have a huge effect, and certainly not a real apparent one immediately, not at all.
Bob Barton expects a nice increase in county revenue, which he said during his campaign could be used to renovate a crumbling county courthouse and jail. Now, what happens if any of the new liquor stores fail? Arkansas Alcoholic Beverage Control Board Director Michael Langley.
Inventory, if a liquor store goes out of business, is usually sold to another liquor store, but it is sold in one bulk section. You can't continue to run it, or you can't just sell a piece of it. It's all sold to somebody else who wants to take it, but it's sold as a lot.
Residents in the three counties interested in home brewing can go into the business by opening microbreweries and even distilleries to manufacture alcohol.
If you want to open a brew pub, there are it's simply an application process through the state of Arkansas. They make application, they set up their establishment. They make sure, depending on whether it's going to be a brew pub or a distillery, they meet the requirements set by the federal government.
But restaurants that apply to sell alcohol are limited to what type? Confusing, right? But it's all spelled out on the state Alcoholic Beverage Control website. And Director Michael Langley warns those who apply for a new alcohol sales license will need to be patient because, for the first time since Prohibition, Arkansas now has a majority of wet counties. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, search the web for Arkansas Alcoholic Beverage Control.
Since Ambassador Chris Stevens and three more Americans died in an attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, questions have swirled about how it could have happened and whose job it is to ensure State Department employees' safety. I'm Jackie Leiden, diplomatic security and what went wrong in Benghazi. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
There was a time when silent movies were simply called movies. While the first couple of decades of the motion picture medium didn't include audio, the experience of seeing a movie in many theaters was not a quiet affair. Often musicians would play music along with the screening, sometimes a score that was composed especially for the film. Other times, the musicians would create a sort of soundtrack on the fly, using bits of music cobbled together, short bursts of music that might have titles like Stormy Weather or Action Number 5. Much of the music for the silent era is either lost or forgotten, but the Mont Alto Motion Picture Orchestra, a five-piece chamber ensemble, embraces the music. Last week, they returned to the University of Arkansas campus to debut a new score for the 1925 film The Vanishing American. A couple of hours before they accompanied the film during a showing inside Giffel's Auditorium on the U of A campus, I sat down with the ensemble's founder, Rodney Sauer, in the lobby of Carnell Hall to talk about the art of playing music alongside a silent film.
There are a few other groups doing this. Mostly it's us. There are a lot of groups that come up with new music for silent films. I wouldn't say a lot. There's four or five. Finding the historic music is a problem. It's been out of print since 1929. So either you are able to find an archive or get a collection that you can use, or you build it up painstakingly over the years. We sort of lucked into one that's at the University of Colorado, and I didn't know this music existed before then. And then I already had the group formed to do dance music, and when I came across this movie music, I thought, well, that could be really cool. We could do that. And so we got into it that way. We have a set roster of musicians who are regulars, and so we have really gotten used to each other, and we play. It's gotten to where it's very efficient to put together a new score, which, if you think about it, back in the day, an orchestra at a movie theater would often change programs every week, sometimes twice a week, and you had to come up with 2 hours of music for these programs. And so you had a big library of music like we've managed to acquire, and you put it together that way. There are a few other people who are putting this on. They usually are, you know, they put together an orchestra for a particular event and then work with that group. We're a bit more of a long-running group.
So say you and I are sitting here in 1927, mm-hmm. 1926, and of course it wasn't a hotel then, it was a classroom, but we are going to go downtown and we're going to see a Lon Chaney picture. And the next week it's going to be a Mary Pickford picture. And if there had been an orchestra there, they would have perhaps had to come up with something that was suitable for the Lon Chaney film, and then the next week, the Mary Pickford?
Exactly, yeah. And we had a very similar thing just recently. We are often asked to record for DVDs. We were asked to do a Lon Chaney film. It actually just came out October on the Kino label of The Penalty, and for that you need big, dark, melodramatic music. And then immediately we were asked to do this very light French comedy called Gribiche that's about a kid in Paris who is being brought up by a single mother. The kid realizes that she kind of wants to get married again but is worried about him. So when a rich American offers to adopt him, he jumps at the chance and goes off. And so anyway, there's nothing truly important that happens in this movie. It's just following these people. And so that needed very light, airy music and very sunny sort of to get the viewers into the right mood for that, where you can sit there and hum along and you're just walking down the boulevards of Paris on a sunny day.
You're contracted to have the score for a Lon Chaney film. You watch it first?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So what you do is you sit down, you watch the film, you note any particular incidents in the film that you need to deal with. In The Penalty, Lon Chaney plays a character whose legs were amputated when he was a child. So he has this fancy setup. So he looks, and he actually looks totally at home without his legs. He looks like he grew up this way. He does a very good job of the acting. But he's also a concert-level pianist. So the first thing that came into my mind is I'm the piano player in this group, so I'm the one who has to play the piano. And what's kind of sick and twisted about this film is that because he doesn't have legs, he's a crime lord in San Francisco, and he has these women working for him, and they have to operate the pedals of the piano when he plays. So, you know, you can read all you want into that. That's just weird. But it was kind of fun because at one point one of the women doesn't pedal properly for him, and he gets really angry. So I'm sitting there playing the piano and then start pedaling badly. We don't often imitate exactly what goes on screen, but for some reason, musical instruments, we cannot resist. You know, we're musicians. So when you see someone playing the violin, it's like, well, you've got to make it look like that's plausible for what you're hearing. But we don't try to, you know, accent every footstep or door opening. One of the joys of the silent film era was that the music was very much what you heard. There was not distraction from dialogue. There was not distraction from sound effects. It was basically the music. And so the music really had a chance to blossom. In a lot of ways, it was the golden age of movie music because there wasn't anything else going on.
It had to be part, I mean, not that it isn't part of narrative in films today, in sound films, but it had to be part of the narrative. It had to be interwoven.
Right. Yeah, it had to be there. With modern films, you can have parts that have music and parts that don't. But in a silent film, when the music stops, it's noticeable. And so you only want to use that for effect and where you think it will be powerful. You know, if a character is, you know, dies, sometimes a bit of silence is good. Or if there's a very tense situation, you don't know how it's going to resolve, you can use it as an effect, but it's not your usual way of operating.
For The Vanishing American, 1925 film based on a Zane Grey book, new score.
Yeah, this is a premiere tonight. We have put this together just recently. We had done a series of Native American films on Native American topics for Frank Scheid here at the University of Arkansas. He does this film symposium every year. And so we've done three or four films. And those have, you know, generally been a premiere when we play them here for the first time, because Frank is particularly interested in these films. And we're very lucky that two of them we have now had commissioned to record our scores that we prepared for here, and those will be released on Blu-ray in the next year or two. So we're excited about that. The Vanishing American is not one of those. It's going to be released, but there's another score that's going to be on it. So one of the things we did for tonight was I went back through the other scores and said, what were some of the most effective Native American themes? No one's going to remember a year ago what we played. And it's what the orchestras would have done. They would have had their favorite storm music, would probably come up every five or six films, you know, unless they were really bored of it. But you would have a repertoire, and the whole point was you would reuse it. So if you're very, you know, careful and really remember well, you will notice, oh, I see, that was that main theme from The Silent Enemy or something. And I don't think anyone will do that. That's part of the fun. But there's some very nicely written music. There's also some really badly written, at least in the modern taste, especially for Native American things. You've got these things where you've got the tom-toms and me, big engine chief, sort of pentatonic scales. And I've been avoiding those to try to get to some of the more sophisticated music that was written for silent movies. And that's what we'll be playing tonight.
World premiere. The people who are in Giffels tonight will be hearing this for the first time on the planet.
Yeah, this particular score. And a lot of this music, you know, it was heard back in 1928 and 29. There are some of these pieces that maybe haven't been played much, if at all, since then, because the bottom fell out of the market. All of this music, most of it was thrown away. The talkies came in, there was no use for it. Some of it, fortunately, some of these band directors couldn't bear, I think, to give up their collection they'd put so much effort and money and time into, even though there was no use for it, and they just stuffed it in the basement. And then it shows up, and maybe if it shows up 60 years later, people realize, oh, this could be important. And fortunately, that happened with three or four of these collections that we've been able to get our hands on. And there are other collections around.
It seems as though you have a both improvisational and non-improvisational element to this, because it's improvisational, because, as you said, oh, here's the storm. We can kind of do this thing we visited before. But there is a definite time that you've got to be done with the storm music, because the storm's over.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah, and that's really what our practice is about, is figuring out how fast do we play these pieces so that when this screen cue happens, we don't have any storms in this tonight's film, but we do quite a number of battles. As a matter of fact, more than are in the original book. I've started reading the original Zane Grey novel, and the first half hour of the movie isn't in the novel. And oddly enough, the first chapter of the book isn't in the movie. You know, it was a very free adaptation of what's going on there. But there's a place where the Navajo come in and they actually attack a cliff house. So we're talking about a clash of early American cultures. And what the filmmakers were doing was setting this up to show the Navajo then being in a way attacked by the white people moving in, and showing that this is part of something that has been going on for hundreds of years or thousands of years. So when these fights start, we start playing the piece. And we have a certain pattern that we're planning to play, and it's because we've timed it in rehearsal. And sometimes it'll be, you know, this is lasting too long, let's shorten this repeat by 8 bars, or let's make this cut, or let's add in another repeat so we can make it longer. And the idea is for us to go out with the film, if it's ideal. On a film like this, it's a fairly long film. I also tend to build in what I sometimes call breathing spaces, where the orchestra will stop a piece, and it'll be a little while till the next orchestra cue, and I will improvise on piano, and then it's truly improvisation. I do not know now what I'm going to be playing for those scenes tonight. I know about the mood I'm going to be after. And I also don't know how long it will be, and that's sort of the point, is if we play a piece too slowly, if there's a breathing space where I'm accompanying on piano, I can make it just as long as it needs to be and go out with the blackout, and then we start the next piece. So there are a few more of those tonight than in some of our recordings. In the recordings, that's a little more noticeable, I think, and so we have more time to try to get it exactly right. But to be honest, what we're doing tonight is probably closer to what it was like in 1925 or 6, where these theaters were making a new score every week, and so you had certain little corners that you would cut to make that work efficiently. And part of it was probably not necessarily scoring the entire film, although it's hard to know.
Your eyes are on the screen the entire time?
No, actually, because my neck would get very sore. I'm sitting out to the side. If I'm improvising a score on the piano, which I do as well, then I have to watch the screen the whole time to know what's going on. Here, I am relative, because I scored the film and we've practiced it, once we start a piece, I know that until the last eight bars, I don't need to worry about the film. It's going at its rate. I'm going at my rate. We get to the last eight bars. I look up. It's like, are we ahead? Are we behind? Can I even tell? As we get to the end of the piece, I'm thinking, am I going to need to fill a little space here before the next cue, or do we go right into it? And that's, you know, so actually I'm watching it less than you might think.
Finally, you mentioned that you have scores that are on DVDs and Blu-rays, but you also have CDs of your music.
Yes, yes. And the CD, again, a lot of this music has never been recorded. A lot of it has been basically forgotten. And a lot of it's very, very good. And it's written in a late European Romantic style, mostly. You will find there's some, you know, pieces on our CD that are a bit, I wouldn't say totally atonal, but they're very angular. They have strange harmonies, especially some of the ones that are trying to get under your skin a little bit. They were very effective writers, and they studied with the great masters. I mean, you look at the composers and you look at their biographies, and they studied with Dvorak, they studied with Jules Massenet, they studied with Grieg, and then they were looking for the next venue that was producing classical music, and it turned out to be in the movie theaters. And that actually has remained true till today. You know, as things developed from early opera, ballet, and so on, to symphonies. The movies is the first one that's never really gotten the respect that the other ones have, but the movies are really where a lot of important music is happening. It's certainly where a lot of careers in music go, because you can get money for playing for movies where you can't so much unless you're working in an academic environment and working, you know, in certain genres. As a composer, it can be tough. But as you know, movie musicians do pretty well.
I love, you can get the sense of the industrial utilitarian sort of idea behind some of them. Hurry Number 26 is one of the titles. So, boy, here, you could call out Hurry Number 26.
Yeah, Hurry Number 26. A lot of them have numbers. And at first I thought, does that mean they had 26 hurries or more? And it turns out that's part of a series, but it helps to specify, because each of the publishing companies would have had hurries. Hurry was an extremely common title. Fast, busy music. You need a lot of that, especially if you're playing a lot of Westerns. You know, you got hurries. And some of the hurries are serious, and some of them are light. If you're doing a horse race, it's different from if you're doing an Indian charge. So it's quite a wide repertoire. And there were literally on the order of 10,000 of these arrangements made. And it's unclear how many were written, because there were so many little publishing companies that went out of business in the Depression, and nobody knows how many pieces they had. And it would be an interesting thing to try to catalog what survives. But I don't know if anyone's trying to do that yet. We're just trying to play them and make them available and let some people know about these composers and how their music was to be used.
People can learn more at your website.
Certainly, yes. So we are the Mont Alto Motion Picture Orchestra. The website is Mont Alto with a hyphen, MONT-ALTO.com.
Rodney, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for the interview, and enjoy the show.
Rodney Sauer is a founder of the Mont Alto Motion Picture Orchestra. Last week, the ensemble was on the University of Arkansas campus to perform a new score for the 1925 film The Vanishing American. I spoke with Rodney in the lobby of Carnell Hall on the University of Arkansas campus just a couple of hours before the orchestra accompanied the film in a screening inside Old Main. The latest CD from Mont Alto is titled Love, Betrayal, and Redemption. You can find out more about the CD and learn much more about the orchestra at their website, mont-alto.com. And there was more from our conversation that you can hear right now at ozarksatlarge.com. It is Tuesday, November 13th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Crescent Dragon Wagon.
Longtime Eureka Springs B&B owner and resident and writer and
chef, cookbook, author.
And she doesn't live in our woods anymore, but she's coming back.
She is.
For a visit.
Probably one of the most fascinating people I've ever met doing this job. Really interesting. And she will speak tonight at 6:30 at the Fayetteville Public Library. It is free. If you'd rather jazz it up, the UAFS Jazz Band and Jazz Cats perform at 7:30 at Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center in Fort Smith. Just $8.
Okay.
And the Saxophone Chamber Ensembles of the University of Arkansas perform at 7:30 tonight in the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall in the Fine Arts Building. That, too, is free. And tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. There's a tomorrow.
Well, it's early enough tomorrow. I've got to get you moving today. Mm-hmm. There's a Sandwiched In program at the Shiloh Museum with Susan Young speaking on Wiffle Trees, Fire Escapes, and Kitchen Cabinets, Early Springdale Inventors and Their Inventions. I don't have a clue.
Okay, Wiffle Tree. So
not a clue.
If you want to find out what a Wiffle Tree is, head to Shiloh Museum tomorrow.
Noon tomorrow.
Huh.
I want to know what a Wiffle Tree is.
Me too.
Huh.
Okay, we're going to find out.
See you there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. There are a handful of American songs that have crossed over from mere popularity to becoming part of the fabric of the country's culture. When the Saints Go Marching In is one of those songs. And while people all over the world know his song, do you know the name of Saints lyricist Luther G. Presley?
When the Saints marching in, when the Saints go marching in, yes, I want to be in that number. When the Saints go marching in.
Luther G. Presley was born March 6, 1877 in Faulkner County on Beckett Mountain near Rosebud. He had a talent for music at a young age and was a songwriter and choir director while still in his teens.
Oh, when the star rebuter shine, when the star rebuter shine, good Lord, be in that number when the saints go march.
Play it. Presley would go on to write hundreds of songs. He was a writer for Little Rock's Central Music Company for many years before he opened up the Pangburn, Arkansas branch of the Stamps Baxter Music Company in 1930. The company ran a music school in addition to publishing songbooks and became huge in the gospel field. Presley would be with the company until shortly before his death, decades later.
Get up! Do your fucking thing! Don't fight the thing!
When the Saints Go Marching In was written in 1937, like most of his songs, Luther G. Presley wrote it while he was living in White County, south of Pangburn, near Clay, Arkansas. In addition to countless gospel choirs, a large number of secular performers have done When the Saints Go Marching In, including Elvis Presley, no relation, Sleepy John Estes, Dolly Parton, and Judy Garland.
Oh, I want to be in that number when the saints go over there. Oh, over there!
Also James Brown and TV cartoon patriarch Homer Simpson. But Louis Armstrong is likely most identified with the song When the Saints Go Marching In, and one who helped make it a standard in the jazz world.
Now when the saints marching in, when the saints go marching in, yes, I want to be in that number. When the saints go marching in.
Appropriate to Louis Armstrong's New Orleans origins, the song has been adopted as a theme song by the city, as well as its pro football team, which debuted in 1967 with the name The Saints. And the New Orleans Saints aren't the only sporting team to take ownership of the song. rugby, Australian rules football, and soccer clubs across the globe use it as a scoring song, especially in the UK, substituting their team's name for Saints in the chorus. A version by the Preservation Hall Jazz Band in New Orleans opened this episode of Arkansas Songs. Heard next is another New Orleans music legend's take, Fats Domino.
Well, when the Saints marching in, when the Saints go marching in, I say, what's to be in that number? When the Saints go marching in.
Whether it's gospel, blues, pop, rock, disco, jazz, or sports theme, When the Saints Go Marching In is firmly entrenched in American culture and is known throughout the world. Lyricist Luther G. Presley died December 6, 1974, and today the University of Central Arkansas in Conway houses the Luther G. Presley Collection. Presley is buried at St. Mary's Cemetery in Rosebud, very near where he'd been born 97 years prior. Here in its entirety is When the Saints Go Marching In by Sister Rosetta Tharpe of Cotton Plant, with lyrics written in White County by fellow Arkansaser Luther G. Presley, a native of Faulkner County. When the Saints Go Marching In by Sister Rosetta Tharpe of Cotton Plant in Woodruff County, with song lyrics by Luther G. Presley of Faulkner in White Counties. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
Arkansas Songs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansas Songs is Keith Merks. For more information, visit arkansongs.org. Arkansas Songs, since 1999.
Audubon Arkansas and the Northwest Arkansas Audubon Society is requesting volunteer assistance to improve bird habitat Saturday, November 17th at Lake Atalanta Park in Rogers. From 8:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., volunteers will assist with litter cleanup and removal of invasive plants, which threaten the native plants that birds and other wildlife depend upon. For more information, 479-527-0700.
Devil's Den State Park will be celebrating Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, November 23rd, in a way that will allow you to avoid the stress of crowds, long lines, rain checks, and sale items. In an effort to help you reconnect with things that are important in your life, Devil's Den will be hosting a day of hikes, nature crafts, and family fun programming. For more information, 761-3325.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith has planned an event November 28th just for adults who want to know how to return to college to finish their degrees or how to begin college for the first time. College Preview Night will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. in the Weidman Center. The preview will offer information on all aspects of attending UAFS and provide numerous resources. For more information, contact Admissions Officer Laura Freeman at 479-788-7164.
And here's a project for early next month. You can design, build, and take home your own little free library. There's a workshop December 1st from 10 until 5 at Ozark Folkways in Winslow. Workshop will be led by Judith Levine, the staff of the Fayetteville Home Depot, and the co-founder of the National Little Free Library Movement, Todd Bowl. There is a cost. Class size is limited. For more information, 634-3791.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 13th of November, 2012. It's the day of the total solar eclipse. Today, Australia and New Zealand, the moon passing between the sun and the earth. It'll happen in Australia just an hour after daybreak, the most dramatic view in northern Australia in the city of Cairns. They'll have a complete darkness for around 2 full minutes. It's the birthday of Robert Louis Stevenson, Edinburgh, 1850. He was a sickly, moderately successful writer living in France when he took one look at a woman named Fanny Osborne and fell in love with her. She divorced her husband. They were married. They moved to Scotland. One rainy summer afternoon, he made a map of an imaginary island to amuse his new stepson. And in 1 month, Stevenson wrote his first great novel, Treasure Island, 1883, and went on to write Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in just 3 days. Robert Louis Stevenson, who said, "I travel not to go anywhere, but to go. I travel for travel's sake. The great affair is to move." It's the birthday of L.L. Bean, Leon Wood Bean, born Greenwood, Maine, 1872. He sold soap door to door. He was an outdoorsman, though, went hunting, trapping, and it was frustration with soaked feet in the wet, snowy winter that led him to invent a boot with a waterproof rubber sole and a leather upper. It was the Maine hunting shoe. He sold them by direct mail out of Freeport, Maine. The L.L. Bean Company was right upstairs from the post office. During the height of the Great Depression, L.L. Bean started issuing a seasonal catalog. Customers included Eleanor Roosevelt, Babe Ruth, and John Wayne. 1942 published his first book, Hunting, Fishing, and Camping, offering advice on hunting moose and reading a compass. L.L. Bean, who was still copy editing the catalog until he died at the age of 94. And it was on this day in 1933 that workers at the Hormel meatpacking plant, Austin, Minnesota, began the nation's first large sit-down strike. They sat down on the factory floor, and they refused to leave. Local townspeople sent them food and books and blankets. And a few days after it began, the workers in Austin won one of the nation's first industrial union contracts. Here's a poem for today by Michael Blumenthal entitled Sadness. Sooner or later, it comes to everyone. The beautiful prom queen who has lost a breast, the Don Juan of the 10th grade who has turned up impotent, the fleet chiropodist who has developed a limp. Sooner or later, it comes, and you are never prepared for it quite yet. you who had hoped to be spared through another epoch of your rightful happiness, you who had always given to charity, like a gargantuan tackle lumbering toward you. It comes and comes, and though you may double lateral all you wish, though you may throw a perfect spiral up the middle to some ecstatic receiver and be blessed blue-green some night by the ministrations of strangers, it will not spare you. It comes and comes, inevitable as sunrise, palpable as longing, and we must go on laughing it right in the face until it learns to sing again. Sadness, a poem by Michael Blumenthal, from No Hurry Poems, published by Etruscan Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, a service for managing businesses' online image by working to improve how they look in search engines and review sites, Reputation.com. Written by Joy Biles, produced by Nick Vedder. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Montana.
Montana, Arkansas.
See.
And where is Montana?
It is just south of Clarksville.
Really?
Uh-huh.
So we have our own big sky country here in the KUAF listening area.
Apparently.
Montana, Arkansas.
Yep. Who knew?
Not us. Not me, anyway.
We do now.
Last night, you went to George's Majestic Lounge.
I did. The All-American Rejects were there, and it was a great show. I got to see them, oh gosh, 6 or 7 years ago when they were at the Amp. So I always enjoy George's. It's such a, not intimate, but it's small enough that, like, there's really not a bad seat in the house.
Right. Were they inside?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it was inside. It was really a great show. And even if you don't know the music, I always feel like they're a fun band to watch because the lead singer has so much energy, mm-hmm. and he's just kind of a goofball that he's just entertaining regardless. And as they mentioned, you know, they're originally from Stillwater, Oklahoma. So they're not from too far.
Oh, no.
And they were talking about, you know, some of the smaller venues that they had played early on. You know, so Fayetteville has a place in their heart. Yeah.
So we had All-American Rejects last night from Stillwater. About 8 days ago, we had Oklahoma City's own Flaming Lips.
Right. Yeah, we did.
A musical migration east. What time did the show start last night?
Openers went on around 9, I believe.
Yeah.
And they went on around 10 and played for about an hour and a half.
Okay. 11:30 on a school night. Not too bad.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad on a school night.
Tonight's a school night.
Tonight is a school night.
In Eureka Springs to talk to some of the members and listen to rehearsal of the Ozark Chorale.
Oh.
They will be performing some shows later after Thanksgiving. We'll have what comes out of this story will be on the air on Ozarks, I believe, next week or the week after.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the week after Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Thanksgiving is next week.
It certainly is.
Early, right? I feel like that's early.
This is the earliest Thanksgiving can come because it's the fourth Thursday.
Uh-huh.
And this year, the fourth Thursday is the 22nd. It's the earliest possible Thanksgiving date. Now, that may mean that it seems like you don't have as much time to get ready for Thanksgiving, but it gives you
more time for Christmas.
Right. More time in between.
Which I need, trying to buy all of the presents and
things. Retailers love that.
I'm sure they're very thrilled about having the extra days.
It starts now around Halloween, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, I know. I heard Christmas music somewhere the other day, and I was like, nope. Mm-mm.
Finally, here's a bit of trivia for you.
Oh, excellent.
Right now, if they so desired, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and you know where I'm going with this.
I do.
And Barack Obama could have a conversation about being elected to a second full term.
Uh-huh.
And the only other time that conversation could have taken place in American history is when Jefferson, Madison, and Monroe could have done it back in 1826 and 1827.
Yes, I may have heard that bit of trivia around the office once or twice.
You may have. Okay. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have a great Tuesday.